You can hear the difference. Bright and beautiful music. KIXI, AM and FM, Seattle.
CBS News. A defiant Senate Finance Committee approves a tax cut bill it knows President Ford doesn't like. I'm Gary Shepard, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. By a vote of 13-4, the committee passed and sent to the Senate floor a bill that would extend this year's federal income tax cut through next June. The measure does not include a limit on federal spending, which President Ford has been insisting on. So if it ever gets to the White House, a presidential veto is likely. The White House said tonight Mr. Ford hopes to spend 2 weeks during the Christmas holidays skiing in Vail, Colorado, but may have to cut his vacation short if he's forced to call Congress back into special session to resolve conflicts over a tax cut, as well as energy and rail legislation. Thousands of people who were planning to fly somewhere for the Christmas holidays may have trouble getting there on time this year. United Airlines, the nation's largest domestic carrier, has canceled all flights, at least through Christmas Eve, because of a strike by ground mechanics that has kept all flights grounded since last Saturday. Negotiations broke off on Wednesday, and no one knows when they might resume. To make matters even worse, National Airlines isn't flying either. It's been grounded since early September because of a strike by cabin attendants. More in a minute.
The time, August 15th, 1944. Keeping pressure on the forces of Germany, the Allies decide to make a massive landing on the southern coast of France. Hundreds of Allied ships wait quietly for the signal to launch. This is James Drury with Navy Chronicle. Allied chiefs of staff meet. Plans are made. Efforts are coordinated. The attack will close the gap between campaigns in Italy and Normandy. After 4 months of preliminary bombing ending in a massive airstrike by our 1,400 planes, nearly 900 United States and British ships put thousands of troops ashore. A force of 9 escort aircraft carriers provide air cover and close air support for the assault. Allied warships destroy opposing enemy shore guns. The invasion is a speedy success, and the United States Navy was there.
You've been listening to Navy Chronicle, an historical series with James Drury and the U.S. Navy Band.
It's no longer warts and all at the White House. President Ford underwent a minor operation there on Tuesday and had a small wart removed from the upper lid of his left eye. The White House press office says the wart was totally benign and that the procedure wasn't publicly disclosed until Wednesday because it just wasn't that important. The National Commission on Diabetes says last year, 38,000 Americans died as a direct result of diabetes. The panel says 10 million people are affected by the disease, and it's now the nation's third-ranking killer behind heart disease and cancer. The commission called for a tripling of government funds for diabetes research. The U.S. Civil Rights Commission says federal policies have been a major factor in creating segregated neighborhoods in cities across the nation. Commission Chairman Arthur Fleming says, for one thing, government housing programs have generally helped middle and upper-income families, despite promises of better housing for poor people and minority groups. The General Services Administration says Rosemary Woods, former President Nixon's secretary, has retired from the government payroll. While she worked at the White House, Ms. Woods earned $36,000 a year. She'll get an annual pension of $15,000. Secretary of State Kissinger, who makes $60,000 a year, has arrived in Brussels for a 2-day conference of the NATO foreign ministers. One thing he plans to do is to explain why he's delayed for 1 month a planned trip to Moscow to press negotiations on a nuclear arms limitation treaty. On Wall Street, the stock market closed higher on Wednesday. Volume on the New York Stock Exchange was 15,680,000 shares. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 9.84 to 833.99, the Dow's best gain in nearly a month. More after this.
Hi, world. I'm Denny Brackett.
And I'm Mike Roy.
I understand, Chef, that it's the berries tomorrow on the cook thing.
Oh, that's right. Nothing that helps a heavy holiday meal go down better than a cool, frosty sherbet of a kind. And that's what we're going to have, a cranberry sherbet salad type thing. But there's something else helps the meal go down.
And what is that? No, Chef.
Comes in a bottle, you what? Pour it into a glass.
Now, wait a minute. No, we're making a frozen cranberry salad tomorrow. No nips out of old Nub on the cook thing. We won't have any of that here on the CBS radio network.
Hello, this is Lloyd Nolan. I know from personal experience the heartache of having a loved one handicapped by mental retardation. That's why I'm urging your support for the people who are helping retarded children and adults in your community, the state, and the nation. And they're fighting mental retardation through research. Please join these good people in your local association of the National Association for Retarded Citizens. Thank you.
Senator William Proxmire of Wisconsin is angry at the Army for spending $200 million to buy 14,000 all-terrain trucks known as goats. He claims the trucks, which are supposed to be able to float across rivers and streams, sink at the slightest provocation and can only enter the water if the angle and the soil conditions are exactly right. The city council in Charleston, South Carolina, met tonight and repealed a controversial ordinance that deals with horses. From now on, horses won't have to wear diapers on the streets of Charleston, but the owners of the horses will have to clean up after them. Gary Shepard, CBS News.
CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. You know, when I was a boy, I always thought the maps in an atlas were a fixed picture of the world that never changed. But certainly not in this century. New countries turn up every day. Old ones vanish or are renamed. I guess nothing is permanent. Styria, Carpathia, Transylvania, I've forgotten names on a map. I wonder if they are as defunct as the dread creature who came from there, whose two long teeth fastened on the victim's throat and drank his life blood. But if they are, they were not 70 or so years ago when this blood-curdling tale begins.
But I know you.
And I you. From a dream I had.
From a dream I had, too, when I was 6 years old.
How long ago was that?
13 years.
Oh, that's just when I had mine.
Come, sit beside me on the bed and hold my hand. I have a feeling. I know we're going to be terribly close, you and I.
Our mystery drama, Carmilla, was especially adapted from the classic novella of G.S. Lefanu for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin, and stars Mercedes McCambridge. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Listerine Lozenges. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
For a lot of people, a full-size car is a downright necessity. Buick understands that, which is why they build Le Sabre, a car with lots of standard comfort and convenience, a big trunk, and honest-to-goodness elbow room for six. Buick Le Sabre, free spirit in the family size.
That's how it's Peter Bryant. Performing is a very exciting part of my life, and I also love coming home to a caring husband and four active, growing children. I count being a wife and mother as one of my most challenging opportunities. I'm glad to be a wife, and I feel good being a mother.
You are a worthwhile person. Cultivate your God-given talents as you choose your lifestyle. This affirmation of women shared by the Mennonite churches.
Share a ride with a friend. Share a smile when you're round the bend. Let somebody brighten up your day.
Share a ride with a friend. Drive together and the time you spend will speed along as you go your way.
Double up every morning. Double up going home at night. Double up every day. It's a better way. We're gonna have more fun together.
Talking about the latest style, we pass away the mile. Glad that I'm not driving home alone.
Talking about the game last night, a guy made a play that was out of sight. It's nice to talk to someone going home.
Double up every morning. Double up going home at night. Double up every day. It's a better way. You're gonna have more fun together.
Driving alone.
A public service of this station, the U.S. Department of Transportation, and the Advertising Council.
In Styria, which these days on a map you will find is an Austrian province named Steiermark, Laura Stanton was born and brought up. Her father, George, was an Englishman who had married into Hungarian nobility and had respected his wife's desire to stay on in Austria at the ancestral Schloss, or castle. Built at the end of the Middle Ages, the huge old fortress mansion was a lonely place for a young girl to grow up in, lying as it did deep in the heart of the country. But since she took the time to write it in her old, cramped, but still beautifully trained hand, let Laura Stanton tell her own story.
I started writing this over 50 years ago. But my confused and horrible reactions then persuaded me to lay it aside. But now, approaching my 90th birthday, I should like to leave a record of why I never married. I've only known the love of one person outside my father. A woman. That is a shocking statement, even today with all our liberation. How shocking an experience it proved to be for me at 19. It was so revolting and so soul-destroying that it stood between me and love for the rest of my life. I am not talking of sex or a sexual relationship, certainly not in the ordinary sense of the word. But let me take you back to the year 1905 and a whole other world.
Damn it, that quite puts me out.
What is it, Papa?
A letter from General Spielsdorf, which arrived by the post. Late, as usual. Everything is these days. Sent almost a week ago from Vienna.
From Vienna?
I shall explain in moments. This arrives barely in time to tell me that he and his niece will not be arriving tomorrow.
Oh, what a shame. I was looking forward to making the acquaintance of Fräulein Reinhardt.
Well, even if the general had come, my dear, that would have been impossible.
Why?
The reason for canceling his visit is because of his niece's sudden death.
Her death, Papa? But she was only my age.
Yes. That's what's so tragic.
Oh, is he still coming here?
No. There is some mystery. He appears to blame Bertha's death on some young guest they had. A mysterious young woman.
Well, what could it have been, Papa? An accident? Or some sort of disease that was catching?
There's no way of telling. I'm really quite shaken. My poor old friend. And I'm disappointed for you.
Oh, Papa, you mustn't think for a moment about me.
Well, I do all the time. locked away in this great labyrinth of a mausoleum with no companions?
Oh, I have you, and Madame Perrodon, the housekeeper, and my governess, Mademoiselle de La Fontaine.
I meant companions of your own age, not dried-up old sticks like us.
Oh, you mustn't talk about that, Papa. You know I've always loved it here.
Next year, we must move for the season to Graz, or perhaps even Vienna, so that you could meet some nice young gallants.
Oh, I have a gallant who takes very good care of me.
A little creaky in the joints, I'm afraid. No, Laura, you're so retiring and self-effacing. It might be time to inject a little hussy into your bloodstream.
Papa, I think we have talked enough about me. And as for how happy I am, just look out at our garden. Where else but at the Schloss could we see such romantic, misty beauty?
It's a full moon. And a lovely, soft, clear evening. Shall we take a little stroll down by the drawbridge?
A moment, dear Papa, till I fetch a shawl, and I'd love it. I have the strangest feeling that tonight something very special is about to happen.
By the time we reached the bridge, the moon was high and brilliant. And as we turned back, the whole landscape was a mezzo tint, shimmering and dreamlike.
This moon tonight, it's full of magnetic force, an odylic influence, which if...
Odylic, Papa? That's a strange word. What does it mean?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be literary. Actually, I'm being quite literal. It means the effect of one animal's magnetism upon the other. Look back at the Schloss, for example.
Oh, yes. All its windows flash and twinkle and reflect the silvery splendor.
As if unseen hands had lit them all to receive some special royal guest. What's that?
It's a carriage. But it's coming too fast.
Step back, Laura, to the protection of this tree. It must be driven by a madman.
It was a closed carriage, richly appointed, drawn by 6 horses, traveling at top speed. As it came round the blind corner to the bridge, twisting and swaying wildly, a female voice screamed in terror. Coming off the bridge, the lead horse panicked, pulling the whole rig to the right, so that what was coming was inevitable. The wheels on one side, passing over the projecting overground roots of one of the great trees, and in a moment... My father was wonderful, as always in a crisis. First he rushed to calm the terrified lead horses so that they in return stilled the panic in their followers. And the coachman, thrown clear, joined to help him, while I, avoiding the still spinning wheels, clambered to open the door and to help out the occupants of the coach itself. I only gave assistance to an elderly lady clad in a long cloak with a hood, whose sole concern was for her daughter. While I took her aside, my father and the coachman lifted out a younger lady who seemed to be unconscious.
My pauvre petite fille, are you all right?
I should not worry too much, madame. I have sent your footman to the Schloss for assistance, and shortly we shall have a conveyance here to conduct you and your... the young lady to accommodations where you may rest, and we can send for a physician's help.
You are too kind. Monsieur. Camilla. Camilla, are you all right?
I'm just dazed, Mamma Mia, but I feel so weak.
Oh, regarde ça. Oh, now, what do I do?
And if you could tell me what troubles you.
This much only can I tell. You are a gentleman and must be well aware of the gathering clouds of war. I am returning to my husband in the haste you witnessed because I carry assurances and information only I can impart to him. For me to waste an hour, or a moment even, endangers our whole future. But I can see that the long trip to Vienna in such haste is something Carmilla cannot sustain.
Now, is there some hostelry, inn, or even sanatorium where I can leave my precious child to be well cared for till I can send for her at more leisure and with adequate protection for her travel?
Papa, why can't she stay with us? Bertha's room was all prepared and is ready.
It is true. We would be happy to put up your daughter and see that she has immediate medical attention.
Oh, you could save an empire and relax a mother's heart.
I would feel more comfortable about all things if I knew exactly who I'm assisting and where.
That is impossible as of the moment. All that counts now, if I can feel my child safe, is for my men and yours to right the carriage so that I may be on my way. I promise you that it is a matter of more than even life or death.
But, Papa, where do you suppose they were coming from?
On that road, it's hard to say. They must have lost the main road and approached this way by accident. Ah, here comes Dr. Zulig now. Well, Franz, how's our little patient faring?
Well, no problem at all. A few bruises. Otherwise, no worse for wear for the mishap. She is perhaps a little nervous and lonely, and perhaps bewildered.
One can hardly blame her.
But I took the liberty of suggesting that Laura run up and have a chat with her before she turned in. Someone of her own age, you know?
Come in. She was sitting propped up in the huge bed, her hair framing her face, tumbling about her shoulders. And now, for the first time, I could see her face clearly as she saw mine, as we both gasped.
But I know you.
And I you. From a dream I had.
From a dream I had, too. When I was 6 years old.
How long ago was that?
13 years.
Oh, that's just when I had mine.
Oh, you must tell me.
And I must tell you.
But you must be Laura. And my name is Carmilla. And we mustn't be strange to each other. Oh, come, come. Sit beside me on the bed. And hold my hand. So we can talk. I have a feeling. Oh, I know. We're going to be terribly close, you and I.
Remembering that old dream, which had never ceased to haunt me, I should have been repelled. But instead, I was drawn irresistibly toward Carmilla. Would to God I had known that the fascination was not love, but an unhealthy spell. The flame for the moth, the spider's web for the fly. But I didn't know, and I went to her, and I put my hand into Carmilla's.
Two beautiful young women, one blonde and blue-eyed, the very quintessence of innocence. The other, lying in the bed, pale from the accident and seemingly vulnerable, ripe olive-skinned, with great dark eyes and tumbling masses of chestnut hair. Perhaps masked in beauty and evil and malevolence, not of this world, and not to be named. I shall return shortly with Act Two.
Suffering succotash, I'm on radio. Hi, I'm Mel Blanc, and that's another of my thousand voices. And that's why they asked me to tell you about Lemon Mint Listerine Lozenges.
Because, my little pomegranate, when your throat is hot and dry from a cold, they make it feel cool and soothed.
And Listerine's anesthetic medicine helps give fast, beep-beep, temporary relief from minor sore throat pain. Lemon Mint Listerine Lozenges. No matter how many voices you've got, you've only got one throat.
So get Listerine Lozenges, folks.
Use only as directed.
You probably have a friend who drinks too much, but you can't talk to him about it because, why? Because it's not polite. Nonsense. Friends are supposed to get involved, so don't be polite. Help him. Talk to him and write to us. We'll send information that can help you help him. Write Alcohol Box 2345, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
This message is a public service by this station and the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism.
First, the good news about the treatment of cancer. Through chemotherapy, which is the use of anti-cancer drugs to lessen pain and lengthen life for many, great progress has been made. Through chemotherapy, a child with leukemia, a woman with breast cancer, a senior citizen with a tumor, can bring a normal balance to their daily lives. Now the bad news. More research is desperately needed to find newer, even more effective anti-cancer drugs, and more programs to bring those treatments to everyone who needs help. You can be part of that research. You can be part of that help. Send a check today to the Chemotherapy Foundation. That's Chemo, C-H-E-M-O, Therapy Foundation, Box 8, New York, New York, 10028. That's the Chemotherapy Foundation, Box 8, New York, New York, 10028. This is Bess Meyerson with a public service message from the Chemotherapy Foundation.
The old lady who writes this story of 70 years ago still retains much resemblance to that once blooming girl of 19. Oh, the china blue eyes are a little faded, the hair ash gray instead of golden blonde, but the figure is neat and trim and somehow vulnerable, not only to the encroachment of 89 years, but as if it had always been so.
We sat there, hand in hand, Carmilla and I, searching each other's faces. There was a silence of what must have been minutes. I could feel my heart pounding against my ribs at the wonder, the terror of that spectrally beautiful face, which at last was no longer a dream.
How wonderful! 13 years ago, I saw your face in a dream, and it has haunted me ever since.
Oh, it's wonderful indeed. 13 years ago, in vision or reality, I certainly saw you. I could never forget your face. It's remained with me ever since.
It seems as if we were predestined to be friends. I want you to be my friend.
Yes, I want to be yours.
Well, we will, we will. And we must start with the first thing we shared.
The dream.
There now. I can see you're shy. Oh, but that comes of being alone too much. So I shall start. I told you, it was when I was 6. And I woke up from some troubled dream, and I found myself in a room that was nothing like my nursery. It had dark wood wainscoting and great heavy beams sloping over the bed.
And did it have a big iron candlestick by the bed with two branches made out of
serpents? Yes. And they held the candles in their mouths.
That was my nursery. It's still there on the top floor, just as you describe it.
You see, it's more than a dream. Now, I remember, I was only 6. And being in a strange room, I was scared. And I was about to cry out when all of a sudden, this fairy princess with golden hair and blue eyes sat up in the bed next to me and held her arms out to me. It was you.
As a child.
No, no, no. As you are now. Your lips, red and full, smiling at me, beckoning me. I climbed in beside you, and you put your arms around me, and softly, so sweetly, I went to sleep.
And that was all?
No. No, then there's the bad part, but I put that out of my mind. I don't try to remember that.
No, you must tell me.
Well, very well, because we must have no secrets from each other. I don't know how long I've been lying there with you, and suddenly a scream awoke me.
My scream?
Yes, you were sitting up in the bed screaming, and I was terrified, and I slipped to the ground, and then suddenly everything was blank until I woke up again in my own nursery.
And hasn't this dream haunted you and tortured you all these years?
Haunted, if you want. Say rather, I've never forgotten it.
But why should it torture me?
What I remember most is the love and the warmth that came from you, and how often I've longed for my beautiful golden lady. ever think I'd find her again.
It's all so eerie. I don't understand it. It's so topsy-turvy.
What do you mean? Tell me about your dream.
Well, it was just the other way. I mean, I was 6 years old, and nobody ever worried too much about me because I was never told ghost stories or fairy stories or anything that might wake me up in the night and worry me. So this one night when I did wake up, which was unusual for me, I wasn't worried or frightened.
Where were you?
I was in my own bed.
And was it the only bed in the room?
No, there was another bed my nurse used to sleep in, but by now it was empty. Except that when I looked over there this night, it wasn't empty. You were sitting up in it.
Me? The child?
No, as you are now. And you came to my bed with your great dark eyes and your hair streaming down your back. And I thought I had never seen anything so beautiful.
And did I get into your bed with you?
Yes, you did, only it was you who took me in your arms, and you held me, and you soothed me until I fell fast asleep.
And I didn't wake up or scream.
No, I was the one who did that, because I suddenly had the sensation that two needles had been run deep into my chest at the same moment.
And were there marks on you?
No, the doctor found nothing.
Oh. I seem to have known you so long. I never have had a friend, a real friend. Have I found one now?
Of course, Carmilla.
Then kiss me and promise me it shall always be so.
Oh, my dear one. Welcome at long last.
Yes. I feel as though I'd come home.
I have said that I was drawn to Carmilla from the first. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. A strange feeling, it's hard to describe, except I could have wished she were a boy. For there is no doubt I was under her spell. And she embarrassed me often when she spoke so freely of her love for me.
Come and kiss me good morning, my dearest. Oh, how wonderful to wake up to you.
Good morning, Carmilla.
No, not just a passing hug. Come on, kiss me. And tell me you love your Carmilla as she loves her Laura.
Well, I...
That's better. You don't know the humiliation of how I must live in your warm life. And you shall die. Die. Sweetly die into mine.
I don't understand you.
Just never seek to know more of me and mine. But trust me with your loving spirit. Come. Kiss me again. So I know I'm forgiven.
Carmilla, no, I...
You are mine. You shall be mine. And you and I are one forever.
I seem to be showing you the worst of her. Because at most times she was sparkling and a vivacious talker. She kept my father and all of us in rounds of laughter with her bright wit. The apathy which afflicted her was only bodily. Her mind was always alert.
Laura, are you afraid to die?
Oh, yes. Everyone is.
But to die together, as lovers may, so that they may live always together?
Well, that's something I'd rather not talk about. Oh, I just remembered.
What?
We must go meet the family.
The family?
Yes. Didn't you notice there were no pictures in the gallery?
They've all been to the restorer, and today's the day that they're to be returned and rehung. And most of them are from my mother's family. She was Hungarian, you know. It should be quite exciting.
Oh, just some musty old portraits?
Yes, exactly what they were. They were so covered with smoke and the grime of centuries. I've never really seen any of them. Come along, Carmilla. Do let's go have a look.
Can't say they're a very prepossessing-looking crew.
Oh, Papa, I think it's fun. With their mutton-chop whiskers and beards and medals and hussar coats. Don't you, Carmilla?
Oh, they're just like all the others of their times.
Well, you must be quite a historian, Carmilla. Some of these go back 300 years or so. Hello. Here's a surprise, all right.
Why?
Look.
Carmilla, look, it's the very image of you, even to the mole on your throat. Papa, isn't it a marvelous likeness?
By Jove, I believe you're right. Can you read who it is? Marcia, does it say?
No, Mircalla. Mircalla Countess Karnstein, and the date is 1698.
Well. I do remember that your mother was descended from the Karnsteins.
As am I think, a very long time ago. Are there any Karnsteins living here now?
Well, none who bear the name, although it's interesting. The ruins of their ancestral castle is not much more than 3 leagues, right to the west of here. It was destroyed, they say, during the Civil Wars.
I should like to see it sometime.
Papa, this is just a small portrait. Could I have it to hang in my room?
Well, if you like, I'll have Hans put it up for you.
And then, once you've arranged that, could we, dear Laura, take a stroll in the moonlight? It's so beautiful.
Here we are at the drawbridge. It's also like the night you came to us.
So you were thinking of the night I came. Are you glad I did?
Oh, ever so much. Someday, when you tell me your story, I know it'll be made up of one great romance. I'm sure that you have been in love and that at this moment there is an affair of the heart going on.
I have been in love with no one. I never shall, unless it should be you.
Carmilla,
darling, darling, I live in you. And you would die for me.
I love you so. Carmilla, Carmilla, are you all right?
I'm a little faint. It will pass.
It's the last time, perhaps, that I shall see the moonlight with you. What do you mean?
The time is very near when you shall know all.
She was so weak, I could scarcely get her safely to bed. It was long before I could get to sleep, but when at last I did, if indeed I really was asleep, I was conscious of something huge and black circling by the foot of my bed. A monstrous cat-like shape that suddenly sprang. And I felt the stinging pain as if 2 needle-sharp claws had plunged like hot irons into my breast. And then suddenly my eyes were open and I thought I saw Carmilla standing there. And I felt relieved. The figure moved quickly to the door, and I followed it, only to find the door securely locked from the inside, just the way I had left it before I retired. I sprang into my bed with the covers over my head, and I lay there, more dead than alive, until morning.
There are none so blind who will not see. And yet it is only human nature to lift the spirits by saying that no disaster, natural or supernatural, could ever happen to us. Is it happening to Laura? Or is she only a young girl with a lonely childhood behind her and a very lively imagination? I'll return shortly with Act 3.
You've worked hard to get where you are, and now would be a very good time to give yourself a little pat on the back in the form of Buick Electra, a car filled with room, luxury, comfort, the perfect place for you and your free spirit to get together. Buick Electra. Think of it as recognition for a job well done.
Keep your guns. In a drawer, closet, in a rack on the wall. Every day across the country, crimes are committed with stolen guns. Stolen because simple security precautions were not taken by someone. When possible, lock your guns in place. Run a steel strap or chain through the trigger guards of rifles and handguns. And if your guns are stolen, notify the police immediately. This is Chuck Connors for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. Remember, your stolen gun threatens everyone.
A lot of happy facts have been written down for you. Learn the happy facts and be a happier you.
We're the Consumer Information Center of the U.S. General Services Administration, and we have a lot of happy facts, useful facts, over 250 government publications just filled with facts about nutrition, about simple home repairs, about what records you should keep. You can learn how to remove stains or how to take care of your car. All kinds of facts. For a free catalog, write Consumer Information, Pueblo, Colorado, 81009. Learn the little-known facts of life that can help make your life a little happier.
Facts you can keep, facts you can use. Learn happy facts, happier you.
Send for your free catalog. Write Consumer Information, Pueblo, Colorado, 81009.
With the morning and the coming of light, nothing seems more insubstantial than a dream. Certainly, although it may leave some residual shock to the dreamer, a nightmare loses its terror, and there is a natural inclination not to recount one, except to someone very close to you, for fear of being laughed at, or in Laura's case, something different.
I should have told my father, but I didn't. Mostly because, to my surprise, quite early that morning, in answer to a knock on my door, I opened it and found Carmilla up and about.
May I come in?
Of course.
Dearest, you don't look well.
No, I don't feel very well. I had a bad dream.
I knew it. I knew it in my bones, for so did I.
Was it something like a horrid and black, like a huge cat that was coming around your bed and springing on you?
Exactly. But I had my lucky charm with me, you see, this, pinned to my pillow, and I reached for it, and the moment my fingers touched it, the thing disappeared. Was it the same for you?
No. No, it almost smothered me. And I felt these two hot pins plunge in and puncture just beneath my throat until I thought I'd strangle.
Oh, how awful. Let me see.
Huh?
Why, darling. Darling, it was a dream. There's nothing there. But we shan't take any chances with you. Here, you shall have my amulet to protect you.
The next night and the nights following, my sleep was deep and dreamless, although the nights were followed by days of lassitude and a melancholy that was strangely not unpleasant. This was well enough for a time, until new and vague sensations began to disturb my sleep. Sometimes a hand drawn across me, sometimes the feeling of lips kissing me, longer and more lovingly, until they reached my throat.
Within a week, my eyes were dilated and dark underneath, and I was pale. And my father noticed the change and insisted on my seeing the doctor. It was just as well that the doctor was called. For that night, everything came to a head.
No! Ah! Yes, Papa. Yes, I'm coming.
What is it, my darling? What is it?
Here, little one, I'll get your robe and slipper.
You're shaking like a leaf. What is it?
Oh, Papa. I was asleep. I was sound asleep. And all of a sudden, there was a blinding white light. And I saw Carmilla standing at the foot of my bed in her night dress. And she was bathed from her chin to her feet in a big stain of blood. Papa, I'm afraid something's happened to her. Let's go. Quickly. Let's go to her room.
Here, child, put this on. Now, and the slippers.
Thank you, Madame Perdon.
Camilla. Camilla, this is Mr. Stanton. Open the door. Can you hear me? Camilla, it's Mr. Stanton. Open the door.
Oh, Papa. Suppose something terrible has happened to Carmilla.
Madame, ring for the servants. Get them up here right away.
Oh, Papa.
I'm going to have them break the door down.
The men arrived in various states of undress, but the door and the lock proved too stout and resisted all their efforts. Papa then directed one of the footmen to bring him his large elephant gun, which he had used on safari in Africa. A heavy charge broke the lock, shattering the door, and Papa and I burst into the room. Not only was it empty of Carmilla, but every trace that she might ever have been there was gone. Carmilla had disappeared into thin air, as if she had never been. Fortunately, Papa had given me a sleeping potion, and I knew nothing of this until the following day, when I woke up to find Papa and our good Dr. Zulig by my bedside.
Your father has told me the whole story, Fraulein. You mentioned a sensation as of two burning needles piercing deep into you somewhere about the neck on the occasion of the first horrible dream.
You mean when I thought I saw the black cat?
Yes, yes. Could you indicate to me with your finger just where you think this occurred?
Right here.
Let me see now with the magnifying glass. Oh, so.
What is it, Herr Doctor?
Please, with the glass, you may see for yourself. Observe just below the throat.
Good Lord.
What is it?
Just where you said a small blue spot, and in the center of it, two tiny sharp punctures. That is the point where the sense of strangulation seemed to begin.
Yes.
Well, then I don't see why you shouldn't begin to get well immediately. But she must not be left alone for a single moment.
There were a thousand unanswered questions I now wanted to ask Papa and the doctor, but I never got to ask them, for as it happened, a most unexpected visitor, General Spielsdorf, arrived at this climactic moment, and it was his bizarre and harrowing story which eventually answered all my unanswered questions.
Shortly before my poor child, Bertha, and I were to visit you. We had an invitation to Count Karsfeld's Schloss, some leagues to the northwest of Karnstein. The occasion was a magnificent masquerade ball. I felt like the only nobody present. The more surprised was I, therefore, when a lady with most stately air, accompanied by an obviously young girl with whom Bertha immediately fell into delighted conversation, approached me and said,
"My dear General, what a delightful surprise to see you after all these years."
"Madam, since you are masked, you have the better of me."
"If you kissed my hand, would it jog your memory?"
"Well, I should hope so. It's a long time since I've kissed a lady's hand. The pleasure is all mine.
Not in fact, since... Wait, it cannot be your match.
It's only at the greatest risk that I'm here. And at all odds, I must preserve my anonymity. I see our girls appear to have made themselves fast friends already. That is good. I have an urgent request to make of you.
Well, I am yours, as always, to command.
I am in the gravest danger every moment I spend here. And I've been quite desperate to know how to protect the young lady who is my companion. Could you take her in for a few weeks, at most, as your guest?
Madam, I should be more than delighted. And I'm sure that Bertha will welcome the companionship.
Well, then, let me introduce you to my ward and be on my way. I assure you, it is a matter of life and death.
Papa, it's just the same. It's just like Carmilla and the lady.
Ah, yes, the lady that I, too, like the general, mistook for royalty. Even for the Empress herself.
Well, go on, General. What happened? It couldn't have been the same as it was.
I am afraid so, my dear. My poor Bertha suffered from the same dreams as you, of a great black animal and the piercing double-pronged punctures beneath her throat. She was wasting away, despite all potions and powders the doctors tried, till one of them suggested what seemed a piece of arrogant nonsense to me.
What?
Legend has it that 200 years ago, the Countess Karnstein Miracalla by name...
Papa, that's the one who looks like Carmilla, the portrait I...
Hush, dearest. Finish, General. Yes. Your father has told me about Miracalla, and I have verified her existence from other sources. What the doctor told me was that she was a vampire and has never died. I would have scoffed at this, except, well, because of my birth, I was so desperate. I concealed myself in the closet the last night before her death.
Papa, I don't know if I want to hear what happened.
You must. You must listen. There was a full moon that night, and it flooded the room. My beloved Bertha lay wasted and worn beneath the coverlet, deep in a sleep almost as profound as death. Suddenly, beside her bed, a black, amorphous shape bubbled up out of the pure moonlight, moving toward Bertha as though prepared to smother her.
General, what do you do here?
To stop you, Milaka.
You have no power against the Vagrom.
We shall see. Rather than let you harm Bertha more, I will cut you to...
You see, with this small hand I hold you helpless as a babe. Take comfort, old man. You are still too late. Your daughter is mine. Mine.
Suddenly she was gone, and I was alone with Bertha. And by the time I was by her side, she had passed away.
Oh, how awful.
That is not the worst. If this friend, call her Carmilla, Milaka, Miracalla, what you will, is not found and exterminated forever, your daughter is her slave, and even you.
But Carmilla is gone. How can we find her? Papa, what can we do?
We are leaving for Karnstein immediately. We are going to open a grave.
It was a long search, and getting near to twilight, before the stone, overgrown with lichen and moss and weeds, was uncovered. It was marked simply, Miracalla, Countess Karnstein, 1682, but the death date had been somehow obliterated. Finally, the last dirt was uncovered. And the old coffin, rotting, lay bare. The lid was rolled back, and there lay my lovely Carmilla.
Oh, Carmilla!
Milaka,
no, the one whose grave it is, the Countess Mircana.
But see how her face is tinted with the warmth of life, Papa. Look, her eyes are open.
No cadaver smell from the coffin. She still breathes faintly.
The coffin floats nearly 7 inches deep in blood. There is your vampire beyond a doubt. Priest, to save my daughter, do your duty.
The priest drove the sharpened oak stake through the body. And that fearsome shriek, which still sounds in my dreams, rent my ears. But I know now, more and more as the years have passed, that it was not Carmilla who died, but that ancient 2-century-old corpse who had roamed in lonely agony till at last she was brought home to the peace of God.
Not much one can add to a story like that, except, very appropriately, the end. You can sleep safely tonight, wherever you are, especially if you are young and a girl. For Carmilla, Milarka, Mircalla, whatever name you prefer to call her, will not haunt your dreams. I'll be back shortly.
Hi, this is Carol Burnett. Adolf Hitler came to power in 1933 and made life miserable for people in Germany. And that's why the International Rescue Committee, the IRC, was formed. It began by helping refugees from Hitler's Germany and went on to help millions more in World War II. But its work didn't end there because war and oppression didn't end there. You remember the brave Hungarians who stood up to the Russians in 1956? Well, IRC helped many who escaped. And since then, IRC has come to the aid of thousands who have escaped from Cuba, China, East Germany, Russia, or wherever freedom is pretty much of a meaningless word. It also does its work in countries ravaged by war. But IRC needs money for food, clothing, and medical care, to reunite families, to find people jobs, and homes for children without homes. So please, help the people who help. Send your money to this address, International Rescue Committee, Box 16, Times Square Station, New York City, New York, 10036.
Just for the record, and to keep it all tidy, we should mention that all the proper protocol was followed in the extinction of a vampire, although Laura was spared the rest of it. But the head was struck from the body, and both head and body burned to ashes, which were strewn on a stream, and so carried away forever. Our cast included Mercedes McCambridge, Marion Seldes, Stotz Cotsworth, Court Benson, and Martha Greenhouse. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
You judged me.
Oh, no. No, that cannot be. No, you are making a mistake.
There's no mistake.
But I have never been a judge. Indeed, I would never be a judge.
Think back. 11 years. A night filled with music, with laughter, in a great hall with brilliant lights.
I really...
Parmenter. Parmenter. Eugene Parmenter. Do you remember me? Think.
Oh, please, sir, if you will excuse me...
You judge me.
I must be on my way.
Say my name. Eugene Parmenter. Say it.
Eugene Parmenter.
Now, do you remember?
I
do you remember judging me?
I don't.
And do you remember condemning me?
I never condemned anybody, never.
And now it is my turn.
Oh, senor, please.
My turn.
No, please, come kill me. Not with a knife. No, no.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Listerine Lozenges and Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Beautiful music. This is KIXI, Seattle. CBS News. Democrats in Congress are already talking about overwriting if President Ford vetoes their tax cut bill. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS radio network. Some Democrats say they think they can overturn a presidential veto. The lawmakers so far show no sign of giving in to presidential demands for avoiding one. The Senate Finance Committee on Wednesday approved a bill to continue this year's tax cuts for 6 months. It did not attach any provision for a federal spending ceiling. President Ford says he will not sign a tax cut without a $395 billion limit on federal spending for the next fiscal year. But Finance Committee Chairman Russell Long says the president's figures are meaningless at this point.
We don't know at this point how he arrived at his figures. We don't know whether it's too high or whether it's too low. When he has made his recommendations and our budget committee has studied it and the Senate and the House have voted, then we will tell him whether we think it's too high or too low. And for us to take a position prior to that time, that we're going to arrive at some figure that for all we know he might have just picked out of thin air, is something that we should not do and responsibly we cannot do.
Senator Russell Long, more news in a moment.
Are you an unpublished author? Do you have a book-length manuscript ready or almost ready for publication? Or do you know of anyone else who is an unpublished author? If so, Vantage Press invites you to write to a leading New York publisher for a free illustrated brochure titled To the Author in Search of a Publisher. It explains how you may have your manuscript printed and published in a matter of months. Just write to GPO Box 1414, New York, New York. Whether your subject is fiction, nonfiction, poetry, or even scientific, specialized, or controversial, this 52-page brochure shows you how to arrange for prompt publication. To get your copy, write to GPO Box 1414, New York, New York. That's GPO Box 1414, New York, New York. If this is your first book, you'll find this free brochure especially valuable and informative. Write to GPO Box 1414, New York, New York. GPO Box 1414, New York, New York.
The street fighting in Beirut continues out of control despite Wednesday's announcement of another ceasefire by Lebanese Premier Rashid Karami. Muslim and Christian elements battled along the city's hotel district, leaving five luxury hotels in ruins. Muslims reportedly captured three armored personnel carriers from the Lebanese army. At least 34 more bodies were recovered on Wednesday. The known dead from this week's battles is now close to 300. Civil war continues in the African nation of Angola. The United States has been severely critical of the Soviet Union, charging the Russians are involved on a large scale. At the United Nations Wednesday evening, the U.S. ambassador called reporters together to chastise the Soviets. Richard C. Hotlett has a report. Ambassador Daniel Moynihan repeated the charge that the Soviet Union is engaged in massive intervention in Angola. He spoke to reporters after Soviet Ambassador Yakov Malik angrily rejected the accusation as, quote, a big lie. Moynihan's retort was most direct.
Angola is being invaded. It has been invaded. There are foreign troops on that soil. Don't take my word for it and read any newspaper in the world.
Moynihan said that officers and men of the Cuban Regular Army are the troops involved in the Soviet intervention. He added that Cuban troops are now in at least six other West African countries. U.S. sources identified those countries as Guinea-Bissau, Guinea, Equatorial Guinea, Congo-Brazzaville, and Somalia, possibly also in Namibia, which is the former territory of Southwest Africa. These sources said further that Cuban troops are stationed as well in the Middle East, in South Yemen and Syria. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, United Nations.
Secretary of State Kissinger has arrived in Brussels for a NATO foreign ministers meeting. Discussions are expected to center around more attempts to reach arms control agreements with the Soviet Union. In a report to Congress, the National Commission on Diabetes urges that federal money for research in that disease be tripled in the next 3 years. The panel said diabetes is now the nation's third largest killer disease, behind heart disorders and cancer. It's reported 38,000 Americans died as a direct result of diabetes last year. Now this.
The French call it an apéritif. In America, it's the appetizer you drink. Either way, Dubonnet goes before.
Before, that's the time to say I'll have a glass of Dubonnet. Before a meal by day or night, Dubonnet is always right. Before, yeah, before. It's the time before for Dubonnet.
Dubonnet. It all started in France, of course. And whether you call it an aperitif or an appetizer, the proper time to enjoy its distinctive taste is before. Before lunch, before dinner at cocktail time, before whatever you've got cooking. It's a wine that's right for your appetite. Dubonnet Before. Made to make what comes after that much better.
Before, yeah, before.
A product of USA, Dubonnet Company, New York, New York.
The holiday season could pose big problems for many travelers. United Airlines has announced it is canceling all its scheduled flights between now and Christmas Eve. That's because of the strike by machinists at United, which began last Saturday. United normally flies 90,000 passengers per day. This is Doug Poling, CBS News.